Not very easily, no. Not without messing things up. Yes, I know. But I'll put this all up on the web when I'm done.
Yeah.
Yeah. The problem is the biggest is 24, and then if you go to 24, nothing's smaller. So you have... No, yeah.
So, thanks for coming back here in time. I'd like to welcome Chris Hurtle from the summer team and University of Minnesota. Mm-hmm.
And the JASIF team.
One?
JASIF team, too.
JASIF team, sorry.
Yeah.
And he's going to tell us a bit about what NT does to really verify that I am Volker Lendecke and he's Chris Hurtle, and to distinguish between us two.
I thought you were Jeremy. Wait a minute. Okay. Which was the one from Canada? Okay. All right. If you're having trouble seeing this, I'm going to put it all up on the web. I tend to use web pages, and I'm using an old version of Netscape, and it doesn't have good font sizing, so I have a problem there. I tend to use web pages for my presentation, so I'll make sure I read what is on the screen. And this is basically, the title is Ins and Outs of SMB Authentication, the Basics. Okay, come in. There you go. Oops, not that one. That one. There we go. All right. I'm a member of the SAMA team. I'm a member of the JASIF team. If you're not familiar with that, last year we talked about it. It is a client implementation of SIFs in Java. Kind of fun. It's being used in some interesting places these days. The other thing I've been doing for the last year, and the reason that I don't have anything wonderful and new and fascinating and technical to show you, is that I've been writing a lot of documentation. I do develop software. I am a network design engineer at the University of Minnesota. I'm in charge of lots and lots of machines. And I'm an incurable idealist. You, network managers, security architects, network storage developers, open source developers, the morbidly curious, perhaps. All right, what I'm going to cover is basic authentication. There are two kinds of levels within SMB these days of authentication. The basic stuff that goes all the way through NT4 and then kind of starts to change around there. And then extended authentication, extended security. And there's a bit in the SMB packet. If it's turned on, you get to do extended security. And we're going to let other people here talk about some of the aspects of that. There has been in the last year a lot of work on the security parts of Samba. Andrew Bartlett here is bouncing up and down in his chair. it's an exciting way to work. What I really want to do is kind of close the door on this stuff, because this is the stuff we now know and we can do, and it's documented, and it's really very much for users and administrators. Got a question? Yeah, well, if I do, it really messes things up, but I'll do my best. All right, let's see. I can go to 24, and it's going to really be ugly. The best it goes. Better? All right. Wait till you see the later slides. They get all messed up. Anyway, where was I? Right. Basically, from a user and a network administrator perspective, there are details on how this stuff works documented elsewhere. Again, this will be on web. This is all web page. So that's a link. And when it goes up on the Samba XP webpage, you'll be able to read it through and click on that link, and you'll find the documentation on how this stuff really works at the core level. Before I go on, I should, again, Andrew Bartlett here, Richard Sharp, Jeremy and Tridge for doing all the work reverse engineering LM hash back in the days when they did that. They did a story on that last year. It was a lot of fun. For anybody who missed it, it was great. For anybody who didn't miss it, well, you can tell me later if you think I'm right. But I thought it was fun. There was a lot of work done in the last year, as I said, on authentication stuff. One of the things is we did try to document it, and I think the end result of that is that it got Andrew here all charged up to make sure that it was all working properly. Some of the more advanced parts that I'll talk about here, we've never bothered to really implement because there wasn't really a lot of demand. I should also say that a lot of the stuff we've worked on in the last year, a lot of the stuff I'm covering here, was covered in Luke Layton's book, DCE RPC over SMB, and the folks in Samba TNG who are here somewhere have implemented a lot of it, and a lot of our implementation comes from what they did, so that's a plug for them. Okay. Authentication is a form of proof of identity, all right? You have to prove you are who you say you are. Typically, the way this is broken out, the way most people describe this, is there are three ways to do it. Something you own, something you know, something you are. Something you own would be something like a key, some sort of token that says, I prove that I am who I say I am because I own this key and it's in my hand. Okay, but you know the keys can be stolen, right? But a car, a door, house door, whatever, that uses a key. Something you know is what we're familiar with, the password. Those, again, can be stolen in a variety of ways. Something you are, well, this is supposed to be the great future. Fingerprints, for example. You're supposed to be able to use a fingerprint scanner. It'd be much more foolproof, unless, of course, somebody chops off your finger. But they're supposed to detect that, too. If your finger's too cold, it won't read, right? So they're supposed to be able to detect that, too, except that there were a group of researchers in Japan who went to the supermarket, bought some Jell-O, some Play-Doh, went back to the lab and fooled about 90% of the fingerprint scanners they tested using Jell-O. That's gelatin. Okay, they would make a mold of the finger, pour the Jell-O, let it harden, take it out, little, stick it on the reader, and it would work. Authentication doesn't cover things like rights, privileges. Basically, it doesn't cover authorization. That is a separate subject. Okay, SMB authentication at this level is all about history. Actually, the whole thing is about history. Back in the SMB and DOS days, when it was new, how much authentication did you need? How much security did you really need? And what kinds? Then when OS 2 came out and suddenly you had a multitasking, potentially multi-user operating system, different people could log in at different times, you suddenly had logins, which you didn't have under DOS. Same with Windows. Okay? And then SMB on the Internet. What happened when we took all those abilities to log in and we put them out onto the great wide Internet? What happened to them? All right. So back in the DOS days, when you didn't have a username on the server necessarily, okay, it might be a little DOS server, right? It might be a little device of some sort. Didn't have usernames. There was no user database. So the passwords were assigned to the shares. I'm going to share my C drive. I'll give it a password. And you could have multiple passwords. You could have, here's the write password, and here's the read-write password. Other way around. Here's the read password, and here's the read-write password, okay? So that you could have different levels of security based on the password that was entered. But there was no way of knowing which user was connecting. So share level is now considered deprecated, no longer a good idea, okay? Samba does implement that mechanism, by the way. We have a security equal share mode, but it's a weird one because we have it, and clients that expect share mode will use it. However, it's actually based on user-based authentication. We pass a username in the normal way, but the password is handled in the tree connect. It's different. So it's a kind of a different way of doing it. And it works. It means that you get user-level authentication on the Samba side and share-level authentication on the client side. User-level means that you get to log in as a user. Your credentials are based not on the password and the share name, but on the username and password combination. So there has to be a user database, which may be a shared database, which is where NT domains come into play. Okay? A server can have its own password, username, password database, or if it is in a domain, it can use the domain controller's username, password database. The passwords are obviously assigned per user. And there was a new SMB command introduced to make this work. In the original days of share level, there was no SMB session setup. Okay, so the session setup index was introduced to allow for user-level authentication. With passwords, there are actually still some things that you can do that are password-free. Once you have username and password capability, you can still do anonymous login, in which case username and password are essentially null. There are, you know, you can put a password in, but if the username is null, this is an anonymous login. And the anonymous login allows you access to specific functions that are shared, made available by the server, so that you can, for example, ask for a copy, or ask to do browsing functions. Asking for a copy of the browse list is interesting. Some servers will let you do that anonymously. Other ones require authentication before you can even ask for a copy of the browse list from the server. Okay. And the assumption there is, well, if you're not authenticated to the domain, now we're at domain level, then why are you asking for the browse list? So, the other option is a guest account. And guest account has the username guest, but usually a null password. Guest accounts are kind of deprecated as well, because they are real accounts in many ways, and there are other things you could do with them. Usually a guest account, if set up properly, will have very restricted access, but it's managed very much like a regular account. Therefore, you have to be very careful with it. In general, disable the guest account, make people use anonymous if they want to access some of the browsing functions and other things that are there. So let's get back to real passwords. The obvious simple one is plain text. You type in your password, the system takes that string you typed and sends it in a packet to the server. That is the simple way of doing things, something that we've all seen, and again, is something that we don't recommend. But just to go over it, one of the problems with plain text passwords is that there's a subtle difference, again, in the way that the systems think. A Unix system thinks in upper lowercase. Uppercase L is different than a lowercase L. They're different things. Windows expects the passwords to be case insensitive. At least older Windows systems did. Newer ones don't. But older Windows systems that did plain text passwords, they were case insensitive. They didn't care. As a result, some clients will always uppercase the password. Some other clients will sometimes uppercase the password before sending it. Now, this causes a real problem on a server that was not designed with caseless passwords in mind. And Samba on a Unix platform would be one of those. The problem there is that Samba, of course, is expecting case-sensitive passwords. So if a client uppercases the password before sending it, now we have to play games by trying different upper-lowercase combinations until we see if we can make sure that's right. So there are awkward things there. And there's the obvious security problem that you're sending the password across the network in the clear. It can be seen by somebody else who's watching your network. Okay? Telnet, FTP, they do the same thing. That's the problem, though. So the encrypted password is safer. It protects the password. In addition, once you know the formula used to create the encryption, usually it is less ambiguous as to things like upper and lower case. And therefore, you resolve the problems that you would have with a plain text password when you're dealing with one machine that does upper lower case and another one that doesn't. So, in Samba, the encrypt passwords option is what you use to enable or disable the encrypted passwords. And you can look in Samba's docs registry subdirectory to find the registry settings for Windows. Particularly, this is a client-side issue. You can set it on the server side. Obviously, smb.conf, encrypt passwords equal yes, that's a server-side option. But what it is the server is offering, I would like you to use encrypted passwords. And the server can even be set, in many cases, to say, I'm only going to take encrypted passwords. However, you also have to tell the client what it's allowed to do. Because if a client doesn't have the registry settings saying, I'm not going to send an encrypted password, it may be told by If the client's registry settings do not say, I will not send an unencrypted password, then a server, for example, a rogue server, could say, send me your plain text password, and the client will do so, in which case your password is then compromised. So you have to note both the server and the client side settings on these issues. So the way the password encryption works is not that the password itself is encrypted per se. It's a system called challenge response. And basically what happens is this. You have a function, F. You have some function, and you hand it the password. You hand it something called a challenge, and you may or may not hand it some other junk. And you get a result, which is called the response. To authenticate, so that I'm a client, somebody out here is a server, I want to authenticate, what the client does, says, hello, I want to log in. A picture from something else, but I want to log in. The server says, okay, I'm going to generate some random number, and I'm going to send it back to you. That's the challenge. Now both sides then use the function I just showed you. They use the function to generate the response. The client sends the response, its response, back to the server, and the server compares. Did the client give me the same result that I got? All right. And the idea is not, in this case, you never actually exchange the password over the network. Right? What you've done is you've done some function on both sides. Knowing the password, given the challenge, you do the function on each side, and if you get the same result, then you know you both know the same secret. I say no, but it's not actually 100%. There's a slight possibility that the wrong information will return the same results. But in general, the possibility is too remote, and so that's how challenge response works. Okay? Any questions on that? Because that one's complicated if you haven't seen it before. Okay? Boop. All right. So there are three. There are three algorithms that unextended security uses to create these challenge response exchanges. The first and oldest one is LAN Manager, also known as LM or LMV1. And again, Jeremy and Tridge gave a wonderful presentation how they cracked it last year. It was wonderful, I think. The LAN Manager has been cracked in a variety of ways. They cracked it first to figure out what the secret key was, because you need a secret key to make this work. There are multiple pieces to these algorithms. Jeremy had started by writing a piece of software a while ago to show how easy it was to reverse the password from a captured set of packets on the wire. So that if you could see the LM exchange going back and forth, you could try various different passwords until you found the right one. And it was very easy to do that, to come up and reverse the password. And part of the reason for that is that the way the LM hash works is they chop the password into little bits, they convert it to uppercase, they do other things like this, and you wind up with a very weak piece of encryption. The second one, the solution to the weaknesses of LM, was NTLM, also known as NTLM V1. NTLM uses a much better algorithm for creating the initial conversion of the password to a secret key, so you can do it's called hashing to create the response. So it's a better algorithm. The problem is that by default, most clients will send both the LM and NTLM hash when they do the authentication, which means the weakest one is in there. And again, you have to know registry settings, which I'll show you in a minute. Beyond that, Microsoft came up with two other ones. Actually, they're the same algorithm with slightly different input. Remember the function a while ago? It said other junk. The other junk is different. Okay? But they're the same algorithm. They're known as LMV2 and NTLMV2. And they are more complex, although how much more secure is debatable. One of the differences that would make them more secure is that being more complex, it takes a little longer for the processing to occur. So if you were trying to brute force a password, it would take a little longer to do. Okay, these are the registry settings. And this is where I get in trouble with the screen size. It should wrap and it doesn't. But in any case, there is a registry setting, and it works for both the client and the server. It's the same setting for client and server. There is a difference in the name depending on whether you're using Windows 98, 95, or Windows NT level. If you go grab it on the web, you'll see the whole thing. In any case, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, I know what I can do. It's probably shifted over, that's all. There we go. There's the rest of it. Notice the level in brackets. If you're using NT or 2000, it's LM compatibility level. If you're not using those, if you're using Windows 9X ME, I believe, then you drop the level. It's the same meaning, different variable. Don't know why. In any case, here are the settings that are available. Level 0 means that the client will do the default. It'll send the LM and the NTLM hash, and the server will, if this setting is set on the server, that means the server accepts any of those and any of the available hashes. Level 2, on the client side, if you set level 2, It replaces the LM hash with the NTLM hash, so you only get the higher quality NTLM hash sent, and you don't have the worries about the LM hash being available in the wire. On the server side, if you set level 2, then, again, the server will accept any of the different hashes from the client. Okay? On level 3, now you've moved to LMv2 and NTLMv2. Level 4, now the server will no longer accept the LM hash, which is probably a good thing to set. Level 5, again, the client is sending the LMv2 and NTLMv2, and the server will only accept one of those two options. Okay? And so these are basically ways to increase the security of a network. You increase this level, you increase what people have to do in order to log on, which, you know, hashing algorithm they have to use in order to log on. In a big complex network, it's hard to go around and make sure everybody's got their machines configured correctly. But in smaller networks or a network with enough administrators, you can go ahead and make these changes and use more secure passwords. Another thing that can be done, another thing we were able to work out, again with the help of the TNG folks, was the message authentication codes, or MACs. This is packet signing. Once you've authenticated, there's a signature that gets exchanged in each message as it goes back and forth. All right? Takes a few steps to get it up and running, but once it's running, what each side is saying is they're taking essentially a checksum of the packet, converting it into, you know, doing a signature on it, putting the signature into the packet after it's done the checksum, and sending the checksum. But it's a signed encrypted checksum. It's one that has that is encrypted based on actually the hashes that were used to create the responses. So is the password hashes, not the password itself, but the result of the password. So what this does is it prevents a man-in-the-middle attack. Okay? And that means that if I'm here and the server's over there and I'm sending a packet back and forth, the server there can't be a machine in the middle intercepting that packet and making changes to it and sending it on, because I've signed it, and when it gets to the other end, my signature is validated. And if a change was made, that will be noted in the fact the signature no longer matches. Okay? One of the things, though, is that if you've ever used security equals server mode, security equals server mode is a mode of Samba in which the server passes it's called pass-through authentication. When a client attempts to log on to the Samba server, the server passes that authentication request to a different machine, a domain controller typically, and lets the domain controller do the authentication and it passes the result back. Of course, what I just described a moment ago with the man-in-the-middle attack is the same architecture, and sure enough, it doesn't work. Okay? So message authentication codes are incompatible with security equals server mode. And these, again, I've lost screen space, but these are the server and client-side registry entries that let you configure whether or not to use MAC signing. Okay? And I will make these slides available as soon as I can so that people can get this information if they want to. So where are we with Samba with regard to these features? Well, one of the side effects of having this wonderful discussion and documenting how all this works and getting it all down is that Andrew Bartlett got really excited. And he started implementing anything we were missing. So LMv1, NTLMv1 support has been in Samba for quite a while. I think that's Jeremy and Tridge again. Yeah? Was that you guys? Yeah? Put that in? So, LMv2, NTLMv2, it has been added to head. Some of the code, again, came from TNG. Some of the code was stuff we put together our own way. But it's been added to head. Demand for it is currently low. The TNG folks have had this authentication capability for quite some time, and we really haven't bothered to completely port it over because there really hasn't been the demand for it. Not been a big deal. MAC signing, It's under development. Andrew's got it partially working. Is that right? Yeah.
For the basic authentication, it mostly works.
Okay. Again, demand is currently low. But Andrew reminds me that this is going to change because Mac signing is, NTLM v2 and Mac signing are the defaults for Windows 2003. Is that right?
Mac signing for a domain controller is very easy to configure. So we expect many sites that will be set that way for someone to click the box.
Mm-hmm. So there you go. It's probably going to be a big deal. So we'll be ready for it. And further information, if you want to know how this stuff is actually done, I wrote a whole bunch about it. Again, thanks to Richard and Andrew and Vance back in Canada and a few other people who helped out. And then there are further references listed here. Let's see, is there anything else? Or is that it? That's it. So you can see this is, again, going to be too big, but I like network connectivity. Come on. Anyway, that's pretty much it. And hopefully that's a foundation for what's coming next, because I know that Jim McDonald is going to be able to do some interesting stuff on the extended security work he's been doing. So any questions? Basic stuff? Yeah.
I would like to know if there are some documentation about how to create those password hashes automatically.
Yes.
I have to create those password hashes by some means, for example, in Java.
In Java? In for example, in?
Java.
Well, if you want it done in Java, guess what?
Question?
Pardon?
Could you?
Yes, repeat the question. He wants to know if there's some documentation to show how to do it programmatically. And that's what I'm going to bring up right now, first of all. Now, let's go back a page. We'll go here. I've got it locally, so it's faster than going to the net. Okay. That's four. That was the wrong section. There it is. Okay. This is a local copy. Yes, that's what I was talking about. I wrote it all up. Everything I talked about just a moment ago, the details are here. And this is online. I'll give you the URL for that. It's also on here. But it's also going to be published in a book, which is coming out as soon as I finish it. this, again, is much too big, the font, but you can see, you know, it's all written up. If you want it in Java, we've already done that. That's the JSYS project. We've got NTLM and LM, and it wouldn't take too much to do NTLM v2. So that's jsifs.samba.org, website for that. Probably pull that up. Let's see what I got here. So those are, you know, yes, all of it's available. This is all in that document. Yes?
There's a very nice Perl module which does all this very nice.
And Andrew says that there's a very nice Perl module. What's the name of it?
SMB hash. It's the decrypt SMB hash.
Right. And, of course, the Samba code has a lot of this involved, so, you know, it's all there. Basically, the algorithms you need are things like DES, not triple DES, just DES. You need, I'm not getting there very fast, you need HMAC MD4, MD5, sorry, you need MD4, you need MD5, you need HMAC MD5. So a lot of this stuff is very well-known stuff, and the rest is all written up. Let's see if I can bring this up somewhere. This won't be seeable. Let's try this. But basically, yeah.
This stuff usually works in English language, but we here use something different characters, something, not all of them.
Right. Yes, there are...
Repeat again.
Yeah, sorry. The question is, what happens when the passwords, or perhaps usernames, have non-English characters, non-ASCII characters in particular, I think, would be a better way to say it. Unicode. Let's go to Unicode. Unicode is supported. There are In the session setup index, there are two fields for the password. The first one is called the ANSI password by Ethereal, also known as the case insensitive password. Generally, it contains an ASCII or ASCII-derived password. The second one is called the Unicode password. And so if you're using plain text passwords, then as long as, well, plain text Unicode is weird. We're working on that. Actually, Microsoft doesn't do it. We're the only ones who can make that happen on the server side. So, you know, that's one we have to work on. But for any of these algorithms, yes, Unicode is supported for anything beyond LM. Anything beyond LM. I don't know how LM handles Unicode. The LM hash doesn't. Right, that's what I thought, yeah. LM hash doesn't, NTLM does, NTLM v2 does, LM v2 all handle Unicode.
So okay? I think part of the SMB password file, the second hash is, I think it was the password in Unicode and then MD5 over that, isn't it?
That's the NTLM.
Okay.
That's the NTLM hash.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the NTLM hash. Let's see if I can do this really quickly. Samba just does Unicode. you can turn it off, or
that hash is defined to be in Unicode.
It's defined that way.
So it differs between Samba 2.2 and Samba 3.0. Samba 2.2 uses the old character mapping table, so when you have to convert a non-ASCII password or whatever to Unicode, you actually have to have the correct character set loaded and known about. You have to configure the server, and it will only do it correctly for one character set. Samba 3.0 uses a subsystem called iconv, and so long as you have the correct character sets loaded or support on your operating system, you can convert from Japanese or whatever, and it'll convert correctly to Unicode. So long as you have it correctly set up, character set-wise, on your Samba server, it should work on 2.0. On 3.0, again, this is one of the things that we're going to make sure works before 3.0 ships, but all the infrastructure is there to be able to do Unicode password hashes from any language. The username stuff is still a little tricky, but it should work.
Okay, I just threw this up as quickly as I could to get a big font. If you want to write that down, that is where the documentation is. Okay? And it'll be on my slides, and it is on my slides, actually, if you go that last page. But I'll leave it for now. Anyway, that's where the documentation is. Yes, it is all of the stuff I've covered is written up now, including the MAC signing. The only one I don't know, and I don't know if, Andrew, if you figured this out, if there's anything special done for NTLM v2 MAC signing. We never figured that one out. Yeah. Have you ever seen it?
Oh, I'm sure it happens. Yeah. I just don't know what the magic constants or whatever is involved.
Yeah.
Something else in there.
We're not quite sure on NTLM v2 MAC signing, but LM v2 MAC signing is easy, so.
That's the same boat.
Same boat? Okay. Okay. Anything else? Before I give it up. Somebody else.
Thanks, Chris, for the first introduction to anti-authentication. The next talk will be about what Windows 2000 plays in this field.
Thank you.
And that's for Jim McDonough. Oh, how do you pronounce your name? Okay, fine.